Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much to John Williams for filling in all last week on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Back after a nice vacation today. You heard Elise Klink's voice there. We're going to talk to her a little bit about IPOs. You know, there are some big brand name IPOs, right? I think Levi's was last week. We're talking about Uber in the future and whether or not those are a smart investment, wise investment, maybe sometimes silly. I think the era of the IPO might have passed a little bit, but we'll talk to Elise about that. In studio right now is Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno, joins us most Mondays to talk about what's in Chicago Inno, what's what with tech. Catherine, back. Well, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Bennett Wakenight, the producer, reads my mind. I had the wrong microphone open for you. I don't know how he knew it, but he said it in my ear. So thank you, Bennett, as well. Okay, so as we speak, there's the big unveil or reveal, pick your verb, coming from Apple right now about their future. And it seems like the big thing they're talking about is a new streaming service, right? We're at a little disadvantage because it's being announced right now, but what are we expecting?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, the press event just started a few minutes ago, and the new streaming video service is supposed to, you know, kind of compete with, like, Netflix and Hulu, right? So they plan to have original programming by Apple, but then also offer, you know, some movies or TV shows from providers like HBO and Starz.
So they would charge me something for their basic service, and then if I wanted to get HBO through them, I'd pay them $10 a month or something like that.
Exactly, yeah.
And so this will hurt the...
So this will hurt the providers that don't want to participate, right? So I think, you know, I was reading last week that Netflix has been really trying to distance itself from this because, I mean, Netflix is doing great all on its own, right? Doesn't necessarily need to share a cut of its profits with Apple. Maybe not, or at least they don't think so right now.
Or I was thinking more of Comcast or the traditional cable companies, too. This is another way to bundle what you want to bundle and maybe cut the cord.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is kind of continuing the trend that, you know, companies like Netflix or Hulu started with, you know, bundling services and, right, and entertainment, et cetera. So.
I also see that they're going to relaunch maybe something that they called Texture. I don't know if you were seeing that. It's a bundle of magazine or other subscriptions, which I didn't know about. $10 a month, this could be something. Well, I think I would like this.
Yeah, so actually, you know, Apple purchased Texture last year, and so today they're expected to announce kind of the relaunch of that and how it's going to fit into, you know, the existing Apple News service. And so far, the Wall Street Journal is, you know, one of, like, the big major papers that wants to participate,
right,
but like the Netflix doesn't want to do, you know, Apple subscription service. The New York Times and the Washington Post aren't.
They're not on board, but the Wall Street Journal would be on board.
Yes.
Okay, so I often am shut down at the paywall for the Wall Street Journal in trying to find articles for this show. Bennett knows ways around that, thank God. But so that would be attractive to me if there are other high quality pieces of journalism that you could buy for $10 a month. That might be a way for a lot of these companies to get more people to participate.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's interesting because you think about, you know, for smaller publications, especially, this could really, you know, come in handy, and it's a way to, you know, get revenue that maybe you weren't before. But, you know, I think, like, papers like the New York Times or the Washington Post, their subscription bases are already so robust,
right,
you know, and so do they need to, like, share profit with Apple?
And then there's a credit card, an Apple credit card?
So it sounds like that they plan to announce that as well. It'll be in association with Goldman Sachs because they've been really tied in with the iPhone's wallet software.
All right, so that's coming up, and we'll certainly be talking about that through the afternoon and through the week, I would imagine, on the Biz Lunch. But that's kind of what we're seeing now. We're going to take a break in about 30 seconds or so, and then we'll come back and talk about these slippers at work, which cracks me up. But before that, there's the Trunk Club founder and others are behind this new way to insure jewelry, which sounds kind of interesting because you don't go to an insurance agent, you buy the insurance from your jeweler.
Right.
Explain that for me.
Yeah, so Brightco, they just raised $2 million last week to expand this platform where basically they work with jewelers to offer insurance at the point of sale. So you go to the jeweler, you buy a new watch, and you can purchase an insurance plan right there, and it gives, you know, the jeweler additional stream of revenue.
It's like a side hustle for the jeweler in a way. They're
exactly.
selling insurance too. Is that new? Is that not done now?
There's one other startup that kind of does it. But you know, the real thing here about Brightco is that they just make the insurance so simple for the consumer.
Right, and you buy it at the time you buy the jewelry.
Exactly.
The other one I think you're right about is called Cover.
Yep, they're out of San Francisco, and they're doing pretty well. They launched in 2016, and so far have raised $27 million.
And so with Cover, if I've got something I want to insure, I just take a picture of it, send it to them, and they tell me what the premium is?
Yeah, and besides jewelry, they do like a host of items and belongings.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Are your feet comfortable? I know you all. You probably took a cab, walked over here.
Yeah.
You don't have your slippers on here, do you?
Not today.
All right. Slippers in the workplace. Mike McLaughlin, who apparently worked at home or something, found his way into the workplace and thought he'd wear slippers at work. And right away, human resources stepped on his toes, right? Is that pretty much the way it goes?
Basically, yeah. They were like, these are not office appropriate shoes.
Which, you know, when I read that, you wrote the story too. So when I'm reading this story, I'm thinking, God, I think it seems to be like everything's office appropriate anymore. You know,
yeah.
I mean, people wear whatever they want to wear.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, he kind of took that experience and was like, let me create an office slipper. So something that looks like a work-appropriate shoe, but on the inside is nice and plush and warm and, you know, cozy like a slipper is. So he actually launched a Kickstarter campaign earlier this month. So far, it's raised about $3,000. And it's for an office slipper that it's gender neutral and it looks like a Chelsea boot. You know, so just
like a Chelsea boot. Yeah.
A flat ankle boot, put it that way.
That's better. I get that now. Yeah.
And suede on the outside, it has a rubber sole. And on the inside, there's memory foam and like kind of like a UGG lining.
I just see a future where we're all wearing the same thing on our feet.
Yeah. And calling it comfort.
Calling it relaxed. Okay. So he's raised a few grand. He wants 20, right?
Yeah.
And if he raises the money and then he'll take orders and it'll be what did I see? $70? A pair?
Yeah, about $70 a pair when it begins retailing on Shopify.
I go shop. Do you have slippers at home?
You sure do.
I go looking for slippers about once every 10 years because I don't wear slippers. And there aren't a lot of choices out there.
No, but if you want a good one, get an UGG slipper.
Yeah.
Super warm, super comfy.
Not going to do that. And so, okay, so this guy is hoping to bring slippers that look like shoes, but he also advises us not to wear them outside, right?
Yeah, so he says, you know, they're not really meant for, you know, rain, snow, the elements that like your normal boot would be
right.
Built for. So he really advises, you know, wearing your normal shoes to the office. Once you get there, change into these.
So, Catherine, the next startup that we should be involved in, it would be corporate shoe racks for people who bring their shoes to work.
Oh.
And then put on these new comfort slippers or whatever they're called.
That's a great idea.
Thank you. I'll share the profits with you.
Sounds good.
Their profits won't be $500 million, but $500 million is what the federal government is spending in this new supercomputer. So we go from office slippers, a little teeny tiny startup, to this huge supercomputer at Argonne that could change the world, right?
Exactly. So, you know, the new computer, it's being made with Intel and Cray. And the computer is expected to do more than one quintillion calculations a second.
Wow.
So that's like really hard to even comprehend, right? Like, how does it do it that fast?
It's hard to say.
Yeah. But the idea is that this is going to help with climate modeling, you know, mapping the human brain, better matching cancer drugs with specific tumors, you know, in cancer patients. So it sounds like there's like really a lot of potential here for this computer.
Also good just for the city of Chicago, right? That this much money's coming here and the science around it, I would imagine it would attract other science too.
Exactly. I mean, the only other state that has a computer like this is California, you know, so this really puts Illinois at, you know, the top of the country when it comes to having supercomputers and, you know, the things that they're capable of.
When do they expect it to be up and running?
2021.
Okay, so we'll watch for that. I like that they're calling it Aurora too because it's near Aurora anyway. I think that's probably coincidence, but pretty cool for that.
Yeah.
We follow a lot the cannabis business around here and how it continues to grow. And another grassroots cannabis, I think is the name of the country, a company, announced that it's picked up almost another $100 million, right?
Yeah, so Grassroots Cannabis raised $90 million last week, bringing its total funding to $165 million, which is just huge, right?
It's just amazing that we're talking about this because 5 years ago, 3 years ago, we would have been talking about, you know, guys selling pot out of their basement still illegally, and now it's legal, and companies are raising $90 million.
Exactly, and you know, it's not the only one. Chicago-based Verano Holdings, well, they were actually acquired earlier this month for $850 million.
Right.
It's crazy.
And so a lot of this is done because of medical marijuana or just on the expectation that the recreational is going to be much more widely available?
Well, you know, a lot of it started as medical marijuana, of course. But I think, you know, what you said that, yeah, people are expecting, you know, recreational marijuana when it becomes legal. This is going to be a booming business.
Catherine Davis writes about this and more at Chicago Inno, chicagoinno.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Don Kleppen. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and we certainly thank them for that. They're sitting high atop the Chicago River in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Elise Glink will be here from thinklink.com. A couple of things I want to talk to her about. One is, you know, there's a real movement toward not just accepting the fact that people are hiring felons, but actually encouraging employers to hire felons in many cases because they're great employees. Lisa's got an article about that at bestmoneymoves.com. So we'll talk to her about that. Also about IPOs and whether or not it's a good idea to jump in with both feet or maybe to wait a little bit. That's later. Right now in the studio, Cassie Pareca is here. She is the principal at Regina Dominican High School in Wilmette. Cassie, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay, so what is the principal of an all-girls Catholic school doing on a business show?
Well, I'm here to talk about our Women's Film Festival that's right. A new event at Regina this year.
We talk a lot about education and outreach and exposure to students and having students learn new things, different influences. And the idea is that there are great examples of women in film, and it will be accentuated a little bit with the film festival, right?
Yes, it's the 60th anniversary of Regina Dominican this year, and so all year long we've been celebrating our 60 years and then launching into our next 60 years. So because our mission is educating young women, we wanted to do a film festival that features films by women filmmakers and films that feature strong women and girls.
So, right, so then a couple of opportunities then. There's the career path education, right, or then there's just the social path of the here are films about strong women or different films about women.
Exactly.
And you come to this from being a big fan of the Roger Ebert Film Festival?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, explain that for me, how they made the connection.
Well, I was the principal of the high school at the University of Illinois. And so Roger Ebert hosts a film festival every year in Champaign. It's still going on. So it's a tradition. My husband and I go to that every year, and we're big film buffs. So when I came new to Regina this year, I thought, oh, a film festival is a really great community-building event, a really great cultural event.
And so maybe this will be the first of many in Wilmette.
Perhaps, yes.
And tell me about the community-building part of it, too, because, you know, I think, I certainly do this. I fall into a rut of driving down a road, one particular road day after day, not really looking around or one institution or another. There's a great institution there in Wilmette that people might not have availed themselves to, and this is a way to bring them in.
Yes, we have a beautiful auditorium and beautiful facility, and we wanted to, in part, thank the community for supporting Regina for 60 years and also invite people in, get to know what we're all about.
The film festival is coming up early next month?
It is April 5th, 6th, and 7th.
And it's the sort of thing you can buy tickets for now, or do you show up at the door, or how does that work?
Tickets are available online right now, so people can go online right now to our school website, rdhs.org. You could also buy them at the door, but we're encouraging people to buy them in advance.
Buy extra. Buy them early, so you've got plenty to hand out to your friends and family.
It's a great bargain. $15 for a pass for the whole entire festival.
And so we talk about maybe bringing the community in, but this is also a chance for you to bring your graduates back in, right, or to introduce your students to past alumna.
Yeah, so we have several alumna. Sister Nancy Murray, who is a former teacher and also a graduate of Regina, and Bill Murray's sister,
right,
is a guest of the festival on Friday night with our movie The Trouble with Angels about a Catholic girls' high school getting into hijinks. We have a documentarian who is a Regina alum, Linda Corley, and she's bringing her brand new documentary, After Parkland, Saturday night.
I know John Williams, who's coming up after the show, is going to talk about Parkland today, but her film is actually going to be on PBS later this year?
It is, yes.
Wow. Yeah. And so that's what we're talking about a great example for this woman to talk to the young women at the school to give them sort of some inspiration for career.
Yes, we're honoring her as an alum.
How do you choose the films?
Well, one of our other alums, Annette Bohenek, who does work on Turner Classic Movies, she and I talked about starting the festival, and we each just made a list of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we came to our meeting, and we each had about 20 movies, and then we narrowed it down.
Do you have a film class at the school where the girls make some films as well?
We do. We have a film studies class, and we're going to be showing a couple of our student-made films. They're very short, so we'll be showing them in between the movies.
What a nice thrill for them, though, as well.
Yeah, and so our students will also be on the discussion panels, so they'll be getting to talk about their experience with the films.
I know that part of Regina's sort of the message is about not just leadership, but global leadership.
Yes.
So how does a film festival like this lend itself to the notion of global leadership?
When we were selecting the films, Annette and I actually wanted intentionally to make sure we had at least one international film. So Waja, the Saturday afternoon film, is a Saudi Arabian film, and it's in Arabic with English subtitles, and it's about a 10-year-old girl in Saudi Arabia.
So we've got Trouble with Angels, Waja, we mentioned After Parkland, and then the other of the four major films is Theodora Goes Wild.
Yes.
A 1936 film?
Yes.
Tell me about that one.
So my co-director, Annette, picked that film. She's a huge fan of Irene Dunne. And this is a film about a young woman who secretly writes a very scandalous novel. And so she's very independent, and she kind of rebels against her small town. So it's a very early example of a woman forging her own path and her own career.
Now tell me, as an administrator, you've had success at other schools in the past. Your first year here, this is about starting something new. Right, and something that you hope grows and continues to thrive.
Yes.
How will you measure success from this film festival?
Well, I'm hoping that we'll have a lot of visitors and a lot of people from outside the community who come and enjoy the films, and that we have some lively discussions after the films, and that our students love it. And people who don't think of themselves as people who go to film festivals, I hope that they really enjoy this experience and start to look forward to the Regina Festival.
Stop by, check it out, April 5th, 6th, and 7th. And again, where do people find more information?
www.rdhs.org.
Cassie Pareka is the principal at Regina Dominican High School. Thanks for coming by today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. And the story continues on. You remember the Bud Light MillerCoors Super Bowl ad dispute about corn syrup confusion, right? Well, now, Chicago-based MillerCoors is suing the parent company of Bud Light, claiming that they deceived consumers about the Miller brewing process. MillerCoors is also alleging that Bud Light learned that consumers don't exactly know the difference between corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup, and they took advantage of that. Now that it's more than just two companies duking it out over advertisements and legal statures involved, someone will likely have to pay. So stay tuned. And quick question, does Michigan Avenue need another 523-foot tall high-rise? Well, Sterling Bay thinks so. The development company that's working on Lincoln Yards is also working to build a 47-story high-rise that would live just on the south side of the river to take advantage of the prime Mag Mile foot traffic. There'd be retail, hotel, residential units, so plenty more options for consumers to try out and much more competition for businesses to work with. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks, Big O. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and thank them for that. John Williams is just around the corner. Thanks to him as well for filling in on the Biz Lunch last week. I hope he didn't do too good of a job. Elise Glink is on a phone line, always does a fine job with us. She's the brains behind ThinkLink.com and BestMoneyMoves.com as well. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
It's nice to be here, Steve. And no, John did not do too good a job.
You know, there's nothing better than escaping to somewhere warm during the dreary sort of early spring or late winter. But it's just a drag coming back when it's, you know, we got home last night about 10:30 and it was 30 degrees or something. But that's okay. Good to be back here in the Business Lunch. Okay. Two things for you today, Elise. And, you know, I know the Congress passed a law to try, and we've talked about this before, trying to encourage people to hire ex-felons, or at least give ex-felons a second look, or maybe to not weed them out automatically because they're ex-felons. I was reading this article at bestmoneymoves.com that says that more than 650,000 people are released from prison each year. I did not know the number was that big. That's a lot of people to be written off. And there is a growing movement, right, in the business world to give these criminals, these ex-criminals, a second look, another look, even maybe a leg up when it comes to finding a job.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially when we're looking at seriously extremely low unemployment rates, and there's talk about how we're running out of talent for companies. And this idea that you can grow your own is an important idea. We're bringing people in at maybe a little bit lower level and then giving them the kind of training and background that they need to succeed in the job you need them to do. And when you have so many people being released from prison each year, there's bound to be a few that actually have skills that you might be able to take advantage of. And I think we just don't want to overlook everybody automatically.
The CEO of SHRM says that one of three Americans, adult Americans in the U.S., currently has a criminal background. That's a huge number, and a huge number of people to write off.
It is. And again, you know, if you're running out of people to tap into, you know, it's possible the people who have been in prison for a long time may not have the technology skills that you would need. You might not hire them as coders, or maybe you would. But there are some really talented people who have made mistakes. I think this is a country of forgiveness, and it's good to see, to open your mind at least a little to try and take advantage of that. And SHRM, which is the organization that you were referencing, you know, I think it's taken a lead in trying to urge people looking for talent to look in places they might not have thought to.
They did a study, a survey, and they said more than 80% of hiring managers indicated workers with a criminal background are a high-quality hire, equal to or even more effective than those without a criminal history. I hope that's true. I hope it's true. But, I mean, what do you tell a business owner or someone who's a hiring manager to encourage them to take the step? Aside from just the scarcity of other workers, you know, how do you get someone to buy into the idea that these people not only need help, but you'll benefit from them?
Sure. I think you have to be very careful and cautious, because you don't want to wreck what you're doing in your culture of your company as it is. And you also want to be cognizant that, you know, whatever crime this person might have committed may or may not make them a good fit. So, for example, if it was somebody who was committed a financial crime, I probably wouldn't hire them to do my books.
Right.
But I might hire them in a marketing role, for example. So, you know, getting to know that person, maybe taking the extra step of additional interviews, you want to see a sample of their work, they may be, you know, willing to provide you with a test or to do a period where they're on probation, and that's, you know, to be able to be reevaluated at, let's say, 2 months or 3 months in. That might be another way to make everybody in the company feel more comfortable.
And of course,
this is a privacy issue as well, so you don't want to let everybody know that they may have that kind of a background. But
you don't want to say, "Hey, she's the felon we're trying out."
Yeah, right. It probably wouldn't go over big.
Real men. 1 minute here. We seem to be entering a new phase of IPOs. Last week was Levi's, which re-entered the public sector, or the public market, I guess, and all I read about was how the CEO doesn't wash his jeans. And I know Uber and Lyft are coming up as well. Are IPOs a good idea for investors like just the regular mom and pop, or are those sorts of things we should stay clear from?
This is really hard to gauge, especially in this era. You know, Pinterest is also coming up for an IPO, and everybody is heralding Pinterest as losing less money, hemorrhaging less money. They only lost $61 million last year versus Uber, which lost like $1 billion. So how do you actually apply those numbers to any realistic probability? You know, people who were early in at Amazon almost lost everything a couple of times before they finally turned the corner some 20 years later. So I think you have to recognize that this is risky, that maybe there's a place for this kind of risk in a small piece of your portfolio. I wouldn't, you know, break the piggy bank and go and put everything in the Pinterest IPO. Just be careful and cautious of exactly what you think is going to happen if you go that route. But I think it's worth remembering that for most IPOs, there's like the honeymoon period and then the price dips back. So if you don't get in at the beginning, you might be able to pick it up at a little bit better price down the line.
That is Elise Glink. Check out more at thinklink.com. Also, check out Best Money Moves. Elise, nice talking to you. Let's do it again next week.
You bet, Steve.